Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tim Silvey here. Now, we're heading back to the States for our guest this week to speak to one of the biggest names in US racing. But before we introduce him, I have great pleasure in bringing in a brand new guest host for today's show. Alongside me, asking the questions, is former Formula One and IndyCar driver, currently McMurtry ambassador, Reigate resident and business owner, Max Chilton. How are you, my friend?
Very good. Thank you for having me back on. I was obviously on this podcast within the last year, and I didn't think I was going to be a host. So I apologise to everyone if I've seemed a bit rusty. I've never done this before. If it's a one-hit wonder, then you'll know it's not for me, but let's try our best. And luckily, we've got a wonderful guest on today, who's James. He's a good friend of mine. Got to know him over the last 7 years. So, it should be a good one.
We have a six-time IndyCar race winner, the mayor of Hinchtown. He's a second-place finisher in the US show Dancing with the Stars, which we'll be definitely bringing up. He has a beer named after him. He's a collector of guitars and apparently antique lighters. And in recent history, has been a broadcast analyst as well as the host of his own podcast, alongside another of our former guests, Alexander Rossi. He's one of the most popular IndyCar drivers of all time, Hinchtown, James Hinchcliffe. A very warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast. How are you?
Well, I'm better now. That was a very warm welcome indeed. I appreciate all the accolades being read off there.
You're very welcome. Now, I know you and Max go back quite a long way now, so no introduction needed between you two. You've obviously had your fair bit of racing between you in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I miss him. We got to spar a lot, you know, on track over the years in IndyCar, and got to know each other quite well. And you know, us and our wives have, you know, enjoyed a few nights out together over the years, and it's not the paddock's not the same without him there.
Oh, it's not. It's because we're both not there, mate. We both need to get back in that paddock with our buses. The bus life was the way forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Chloe miss out on that, and we miss Becky as well. Those nights out we did in Chicago were good ones to remember. So hopefully we'll be back next year for the 500, and we can all catch up.
Love it. And I owe her a trip to England, so we'll have to come visit you guys when I eventually make good on that promise.
Oh, good, good. We look forward to it.
Now, James, you're originally from Ontario, Canada, but where are you joining us from today? The background is, I guess this is home. Is it where you are now?
Yes, yeah. So I'm at my my home in Indianapolis. You know, I've been here a while now. So from, yeah, just outside the Toronto area, but I've been in Indy for 13 years now, I think. So it's, yeah, this is home now.
Yeah. Now, take us back to the very, very early years. What was life like in the Hinchcliffe household way back when? Was there motorsport there originally, somewhere else in the family? How did it show itself?
It was all my dad. My dad, you know, he was English and just had a massive love of motorsport. And, you know, I've got an older brother and an older sister. Neither one of them really kind of took to it, but from a really early age, I just loved it. So it was, you know, Sunday mornings watching F1 with dad, Sunday afternoons watching IndyCar races with dad. And so I caught the bug pretty early because of him.
I did find something else out on Wikipedia that part of the reason that you got into motorsport in the first place was because of a man called Greg Moore. And I don't know whether this is one of those things that you read on Wikipedia that isn't true, but for those who don't know, Greg Moore suffered a very nasty crash at California Speedway. Was he one of the reasons you got into racing? And what was it about him that gave you that inspiration?
Well, I mean, I was already racing when Greg sort of came onto the scene, and that's kind of our careers paralleled in the sense that when he got into IndyCar was the same year I started racing go-karts. So I'd already had a passion for motorsport. I already wanted to race. I got my go-kart for my 9th birthday, and I was already a huge fan of IndyCar racing. And that was the same year this young Canadian up-and-comer who had broken all the records in the junior categories broke onto the scene. And so it was a natural fit, right? It was easy to kind of cheer for Greg as a young Canadian kid, cheering on the young Canadian driver. But on top of that, he was just an awesome guy. You know, he was a bad, fast driver, but a really, you know, just down to earth, nice dude, good Canadian dude. And it was the easy kind of person to, you know, look up to as a kid, as a role model. I was a huge Greg fan, followed his career very closely.
Greg's one of those people I wish I met, because everyone I know who knew him absolutely loved and praised him. It's a bit like the late, great Dan Weldon. I never got to meet Dan, and everyone just admired him as well. So I don't know what it is they had, but they were loved hugely in the paddock, and I wish I got to meet them.
Yeah, because he would have obviously spent a lot of time with Dario over the years and TK, and, you know, those were some of Greg's best mates. And, yeah, the stories those guys have. I mean, that was one of my favorite things when I first got to IndyCar. Dario was kind of one of my first sort of mentor types, because we'd had a shared sponsor when I was in Lights. And so I got to know him a little bit more than the other guys before I even got there. And one of the most fun things hanging out with him was just listening to old Greg stories, you know, sitting in the bus after a race with a couple of Coors Lights and listening to all the mayhem those guys used to get up to.
Yeah, I wish one day there's a podcast where we can hear some of the stories, because the stuff that I've heard definitely can't go on a podcast. Some of the best stories I've ever heard. So, yeah, hopefully podcasts just get slightly more extreme as they go on.
Well, we can go there. I mean, I'm more than happy to go there.
We should get Scott and Darrow on as well, and they can share some of the stories they've told me.
Look at Chilton already booking himself in for host slot number two. Now, James, we're going to skip over most of your early career. We're going to head straight into IndyCar.
Hang on, before you jump over that,
go on.
A bit of Wikipedia told me earlier that you did Star Mazda. Now, you're not the only person on this podcast that did Star Mazda. I did a one-off appearance in late 2007 at Laguna Seca.
No way.
James Davison is my teammate. Now, I can't remember the name of the team. It was a silver car with green on it. If you told me, I would get it. James Davison was my teammate. And, weird weekend. I went out to Laguna Seca to race LMP1 with my brother. I was only 16. I'd already raced in the UK, but the US licensing agency, even though they knew I was coming, decided, like, the week of flying out there, that I was too young, and if I crashed and injured someone in the crowd, they'd be responsible. So they got another driver in for my brother, and then gave me a free drive in Star Mazda. And it was mental, because it was big grids. I think there were like 25 cars.
Wow. Yeah,
the back sort of six or seven were like gentlemen drivers. Right. And out of the 15 lap race, I think there was four or five green laps, and I started P5. They had those weird cross ply tires, so I thought I had a puncture, but it was just the tires moving around. But yeah, mega weekend, and I just loved that whole paddock was really good fun. But I looked, you did it in 2005, so I missed you by a couple of years.
Yeah, you did. But man, that you're right, that car was so much fun to race. It wasn't anything technically special, but it had the bi-ply tire, like you said, and just the competition, the fields were great. I mean, for on-track battles, that was probably my favorite year of my career, because every weekend was just an epic battle. The cars were so much fun to throw around. So yeah, that's a good shout-out. I enjoyed that one.
I think it's something to do with early single-seater life. Like, I still, to this day, think the best race car I've ever driven is a Formula 3 car.
Yeah.
They're not too fast, but they've got plenty of downforce, the right sort of power, and it just makes the racing pure. And that's what I remember, that Star Mazda weekend I did. It was just mental. There was cars everywhere.
There's talking of good cars to drive. Before we get onto the IndyCar stuff, there was, of course, A1 GP. Before we get into it, a really quick message. This show has grown into something far bigger than we ever imagined. It's been a huge honour to chat with F1 world champions like Nico Rosberg, legends like Mario Andretti, Jody Scheckter and Gerhard Berger. People right at the top of the sport like the brilliant Günther Steiner and current stars like Alex Albon, Lucas Degrassi and Tatiana Calderon. It really is a privilege. But without you, we wouldn't be able to continue. And without sponsors, we couldn't bring you the stories from the inner workings of the sport we all love. With that in mind, I'm over the moon to have F1 Experiences back with us to support the show for season 13. It's really important to us that we align with brands that are relevant and can add value to you. F1 Experiences is the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One, and it's the closest thing you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. You can book with them today. With F1 Experiences' official ticket packages coming direct from Formula One, you can get unique access that simply isn't available anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 Experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experience package by using the code MMPODCAST when checking out online. Good things come to those who listen to the Motormouth podcast. Don't say we don't treat you well. So, what are you waiting for? The 2023 F1 season will be here before you know it, so go get booking your F1 Experience today with f1experiences.com. And A1GP, I still think is something that somebody needs to bring back. But you did it for Team Canada. Those were some pretty cool cars to drive as well. And actually a very good series that had a pretty good degree of popularity before its demise. Do you have some fond memories of racing in that?
It's the greatest championship, I think, out there. And there's so many reasons why it was so good. The cars, again, kind of similar. They weren't particularly technically advanced. There wasn't anything special about them, but they raced really well. The on-track battles were good. The format of the weekend was great. You had a sprint race and a feature race. One was a standing start. One was a rolling start. One had pit stops. One didn't. It just had, it had everything, you know, and it was the fact that it ran in the off season. It gave motorsports fans globally something to watch. There was the global appeal because it was the kind of World Cup concept. Drivers didn't get points. Teams got points. So if you had a driver conflict with their sort of normal day job, you could get someone else in and the team could still be in the championship fight. You had to run a rookie in the first practice session every weekend. So it gave young drivers an opportunity to drive, you know, a big horsepower car in front of a big audience. They did so many things right. They also threw the best parties, but that's, you know, besides the point. But yeah, it really was a tragedy when that thing, when that thing fell apart. But I would love to see it, you know, resurrected in some way or another, because on paper and in practice for a while, it was it just worked. Awesome.
But it's frustrating because I've spoken to a lot of drivers that used to race in that, and every single one has said the same thing. I would love to see it back. It's a brilliant, it was a brilliant series with good cars, like you say. It just, you know, for whatever reason at that point in time, the commercial model didn't work, which is a huge shame.
I used to love watching it because it was just when I was starting to get into single seaters, and that was like a really highly powered car. So I thought, well, what's this? And it was always in the off season, so it was nothing else.
Right.
I used to love it, and I could be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure it's what put Hülkenberg on the map.
Yeah, big time.
Because I remember him doing pretty well, and he was really young at the time, and everyone was young driving these big cars. Because I had Duncan Tappy was a friend of mine driving it. I think Craig Dolby drove it. And there were big, powerful cars, but the racing was brilliant. Also, my old team boss wife, Stephanie Carlin, that's where they met, because she was the press officer for A1 Grand Prix.
Ah, no way.
Running Team India. I think it was Team India. Yeah, it was. And that's how they met. So it's, I've heard lots of stories about it through Stephanie. And it was just, it's a shame it's still not going, because it sounded an amazing thing to be a part of.
Yeah, it needs to be brought back. But you did that. And IndyCar eventually did come calling. I think it was 2011 when you took part in your first IndyCar race. And I remember asking Max this question, actually, when we had him on the show. But what was it like? Do you remember the emotions that were going through you that first time that you went out into a full-blown IndyCar race?
Yeah, very, very clearly. I mean, I had big-time imposter syndrome, to be honest. You know, I had run the previous 2 years in Indy Lights. And so you're traveling around with the same circus, same tracks, and you're watching all the IndyCar stuff. And I remember it was at Barber Motorsports Park where I made my first start. And up to that point, you know, the last 2 years, you do the Indy Lights race, and then it was just, you just walked the grid. That was just what you did, right? You got dressed, you know, got out of your suit, got whatever, and then you'd go and you'd walk the grid, see and be seen, whatever, try to shake Chip Ganassi's hand or Michael Andretti's hand, let them know how you did that day, kind of thing. And then at some point in the procedure, you know, you get to 10 minutes before, you know, whatever, they come and they clear the field of all non-essential personnel, and you go off and watch the race wherever you watch the race. So I remember being on the grid for that race, and I qualified right next to Dario, which was, you know, insane, because here you go, this multiple champion, multiple 500 winner, like an idol of mine, starting right next to him. And that whistle blows and they start clearing off the grid, and I like started walking away. I'm like, oh no, hang on a minute, I'm supposed to stay now. And it was such a crazy feeling once everything was cleared out and it was just teams, drivers, and IndyCars sitting on the grid. You're sort of looking around like, holy shit, like we really did this. We're about to go do an IndyCar race. It was so cool.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting. Max, do you remember your first one? I know we talked about this before, but
it must have been St. Pete. Yeah, it was St. Pete 2016. Yeah. And I don't know why, but that St. Pete race, I was just about to mention to James, actually, how did he find the physicality? Because Barber, I think, is the second most physical place. It's just relentless. There's no rest. And also St. Pete, I don't know why, I always found that race go on for hours.
It's the longest race.
Always over 2 hours, because there was so many yellow flags. And it always annoyed me that they made the race so long. Because I remember saying to the stewards, even if this is a green race, it's going to take nearly just under 2 hours. So, and it's a street circuit, it's going to be like 2 hours, 20 minutes. And they were always that long. It was always the first race of the season where you might be fit physically, but you're not car fit. And it just, that was a brutal race.
So hot and humid. And
Yeah. And just popped into my mind, and we can talk about it because it's a podcast, but I'm pretty sure, and I don't know the story, I remember watching it on TV. Didn't you lose your, like, have to pee in the car a race at Barber once? Wasn't that like a couple of years ago?
That was, like 20...
I can't remember how that happened.
It was because it was raining, right? So we started, they red flagged the race. We're sitting in the cars waiting for the rain to let up. And you know what it's like, man. Like, first of all, I had hydrated for a dry race, and then it rained. So already it's not as hot. You're not working as hard. Then they red flag it. And you know what it's like. If you're in the car and you're racing, you don't really think about it. Your body goes into a certain mode and just shuts everything else off, right? Well, we were just sitting there and just water dripping around everywhere. And I just was in agony. I was like, man, I got to go to the bathroom. And so I got on the radio. I was like, hey, can you ask for permission? I mean, 3 minutes from wheel off to wheel on, like, that's it. And the official's like, no, you know, we're thinking about going green soon. I was like, it's raining harder than when we red flagged it. There's absolutely no way we're going green. He's like, no, I can't let you out of the car, man. And I'm on the radio to the team. I'm thinking, guys, this might be bad. And he goes like, well, I don't know what to tell you. And then amazingly, they come on the radio. They're like, all right, we're starting up in 60 seconds. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Okay, if we're going racing, let's go racing. So we fire up. We're doing some pace laps behind the car. And at this point, I'm in absolute agony. I'm now freezing cold, right? Because you're soaking wet. You've just been sitting there. You haven't been working. So I'm freezing cold. I'm shaking. I'm shaking from the pain in my bladder to the point where like my foot was shaking and I like jabbed the throttle and like nearly spun out under pace car. And so I'm thinking, I can't do that. I'm going to crash the car if I don't. And so it took a whole lap under caution, in the wet. And I just forced myself to let it out. And I was just like, I can't believe it, but I got to do this because I'm going to crash if I don't. And we do like 5 laps behind the safety car. And then they're like, you know what? It's too bad. Come in, red flag. Everybody get out of their cars. We're done for the day.
Yes.
I remember the presenters laughing.
Bad luck.
It was very amusing. I don't know why, but I feel exactly the pain you've been through. So in all my 21 years of racing, the only time I've ever had to pee in the car was at Nashville 2 years ago. And it was, I'm not joking, it's probably the most I've ever had to concentrate in my life. And it was under caution, but even just driving a racing car, the only way I could do it was on a steady throttle across the bridge in a straight line.
It's so hard.
It took a long time to get going.
It's so hard.
It was brutal. I don't know how people actually do it when they're racing. I don't see how they can physically do it. And then going back to the cold at Barber, it might have been that race, but I remember I was with Carlin, so it was either 2018 or 2019. I've never felt cold like it, to the point where, because we were going slow under yellow, you're not creating any heat, but you're just getting soaked because you're not going fast enough. And I remember saying to the team, like, I'm going to have to come in. They're like, you can't come in. I was like, yeah, but I feel like I'm going to shut down. Like, I got the full on shakes. And so, yeah, I feel your pain. To have the cold and then need the pee, you deserve a gold medal, mate.
I can't believe we've just spent 5 minutes talking about taking a piss inside an IndyCar. But I like
you look
it.
Up the interview; it's pretty fun.
I'm not complaining, but it's not the only thing that's happened to you inside the cockpit. You've had your fair share of interesting experiences over and above taking a wee inside the car. 2015 doesn't hold great memories for you. Could you just explain to some of our listeners, many of whom are British, but will be IndyCar fans, but may not have experienced what you experienced in 2015 at Turn 3 in May. Just take us through what happened on that fateful day.
Yeah, so it was a practice session post-qualifying and just kind of running around in race trim and had a suspension failure. The right front rocker failed. Right in the middle of the corner in turn three, hit the wall at about 220 miles an hour, which isn't good on any day. But to make it even worse, part of the suspension, rather than kind of folding up as suspension normally does when you crash it into a concrete wall, it shot through the tub. It kind of like when you hold an egg end to end, it doesn't break. I think I hit it that perfect angle, and rather than folding, it just got forced through the tub and essentially through me. And for lack of a better term, I was shish kebabbed. And it hit an artery in my left leg, so I was kind of bleeding out on the racetrack there. But through some miraculous work by the safety team and the doctors there at IU Methodist, they managed to find the problem and plug the hole, so to speak. But it was a bit touch and go there, to be honest. I had 22 units of blood pumped into me because I was just leaking it as fast as they could put it in. And to put that in perspective, your body only holds about 11. Jeez. So I had 2 full oil changes, basically.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, we've all seen the footage, and it's scary stuff. But presumably, you remember the impact. And, well, do you remember the impact?
No, mercifully, I was so concussed. I was conscious when they got to the car, but I was so concussed, I don't actually remember the hit.
So do you?
And more importantly, I don't remember the extraction.
I was going to say, because that would have been something that you'd have to live with, you know, from a mental perspective, having that, going through that experience. So I suppose you're just going on what people have recounted to you who were there helping you at the time. And you mentioned the concussion. It's weird. I actually had a concussion at the weekend, which I'm sort of 4 days into it, but really random. I can't claim it was as exciting as your accident. I was getting rid of some rubbish at my local tip, and the electric boot of my car managed to collect a giant Bluetooth speaker that I'd put in the back of my car, and took it up with the boot about a foot and a half up. When I came to the back of the car to get stuff out the back of the car, the speaker fell on my head. But it fell from about a foot and a half or whatever, 2 feet. But it's a big chunk. It's like a 10-kilo speaker. And I rang the hospital. They were like, yeah, you need to come in. And they said, yeah, you've given yourself a really healthy concussion there. And it's a weird feeling, even having it mildly like I did. I felt sick, I was dizzy, my jaw ached, my neck ached. I can't imagine what the recovery would be like at a crash at 230 miles an hour or something like that. What was that recovery like? When did you sort of come around in hospital and think, shit, I'm lucky to be alive, and now I've got to, you know, get my head around racing again?
Yeah, it was about 6 or 7 hours after the crash is when I kind of first start coming to. I'd already been in and out of surgery, and, you know, my memory was I was driving the car. I was following Montoya. I was in a really good tow, actually. Mm-hmm. Max knows what it's like. You're on one of those really good tow laps. Like, all right, this is a nice PR lap. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I, in a blink, literally a blink of an eye, I wake up. I'm in a hospital on a backboard, neck brace, tube down my throat, staring up at a bunch of bright lights thinking, all right, this isn't good. Mm-hmm. Something's gone wrong here. And I was so fuzzy through a combination of, you know, the drugs and the concussion that as many times as I asked the question of what happened, because it was such a weird injury. I mean, the failure itself was weird in the car. And then the injury that came as a result was, I mean, it's never really happened before. So trying to explain a completely foreign concept to someone that's heavily concussed and heavily sedated was a bit time consuming. I feel bad for the people that had to answer those questions originally. And it probably took me a full 3 or 4 days before I grasped and really understood what it was that injured me, why I was hurt. I got that I crashed, fine, but I couldn't understand the injuries. for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And it, yeah, that started a 4-month process really of recovery. The first part was really just rest because I was very lucky that I didn't break any bones. The suspension missed all bones. It just hit and organs. It really just hit soft tissue, muscle, and then obviously an artery. So it was a solid 2 months of not really doing anything, just kind of letting the body do its thing. And then a month of starting to kind of move a little bit more. And then the final month is when I kind of was able to start training again and getting back into the physical shape required to drive an Indy car, which obviously is not nothing. And sitting around for 2 months, God, it's amazing how quick you lose everything. Yeah. Like every ounce of muscle you've got, every ounce of fitness you had. It comes back relatively quick, compared to getting it in the first place. But it was, it was a long road.
I find this fascinating because racing drivers very rarely talk about. They'll talk about a crash or a shunt, but they won't talk about like a nasty accident. So hearing, I've never spoken to James about it, and I've never Googled. Like I never Google. I'm not one of these drivers that Googles or YouTubes a crash. I just don't want to see it. Mm.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So it's amazing to hear what he had to go through and then the comeback he had, because the comeback was the special thing about this. And this is what I love about athletes in general, is how they bounce back from challenging situations. So James, some of the British listeners over here won't realize what you did at the Indianapolis 500 qualifying. So let them know about that.
Yeah, so a year on from the accident, almost to the day, we were back at the Speedway. It was month of May again, and it was qualifying weekend. And, you know, a lot of people were talking coming into the weekend, you know, what's it going to be like going back to the scene of the crime, quote unquote. I'd been back in a car. The season had started. We'd been back racing. I missed the rest of that year in 2015. Was back in the car testing in the off season, and then obviously first couple races of the year, but hadn't been back to Indy yet. And so everybody was sort of, oh, what's it going to be like? Can he still do it? Is he going to manage it? And I went into that month with a very, very clear goal of trying to change the story that people told about me at the Speedway. And I had a cool little, chat with my team beforehand and like, hey, look, we all had a bad year last year here. Cause they all went through it too, right? I was maybe the one in the car, but it's like losing a family member, right? It's like having your brother get hurt. So a lot of the same people were on my car and we're like, all right, we're going to make a new story. We're going to give them something else to talk about. And we come to qualifying weekend and, Max can attest, qualifying at Indy is just such a unique experience. It's one of the coolest things that an IndyCar driver gets to do. And I think it'll stand out in any driver's career, no matter what they've done. Sports cars, F1, NASCAR, whatever. You talk to drivers that have done the 500, and those four qualifying laps are just some of the hairiest, craziest, scariest, but most exhilarating and fun thing that you could possibly do in a race car. So we come back a year after the accident, and we managed to, long story short, we'll take the drama out of qualifying weekend for you, but long story short, we ended up qualifying on pole for the 100th running of the 500. Just about a year to the day after the accident. So it was pretty special, because it was such a good comeback for the whole team, to the pride of being pole there. It goes down to, not just the driver, the team being able to build the fastest car of 33 cars when, everybody is putting all their heart and soul into those particular cars for that particular race. Cause it's just so meaningful to the IndyCar world. And to come out on top of that, given everything we'd been through over the previous 12 months, was really special.
So do you think that was the most special day of your career, or your first race win in IndyCar?
It's tough. It's up there for sure. I mean, the first win is always so remarkable because it just is such a justification of all the hard work, all the sacrifice, all the everything you've done up to that point in your life, everything your family's done, everybody around you, and to get there and then to win at that level, you're like, okay, it was all worth it, right? We did the right thing. So that's always going to be a special day. But I think the emotion around, you know, the Indy thing and being on pole after everything was, like I said, it was right up there. It was a very cool moment.
A very quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsors at F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including driver appearances, private pit lane walks, behind-the-scenes tours of the illustrious F1 paddock, team garages, the famous podium, and loads more. It's the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, Motormouth listeners can get 5% off your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MMPODCAST when booking online at f1experiences.com. Now, I want to turn our attention to Formula One. I know you like your Formula One. I think you were in Abu Dhabi Yas Marina Circuit recently, right, for the F1. I asked this same question to Connor Daly a while back on the podcast, and he had pretty strong views on it. You probably know what I'm going to ask. IndyCar drivers, F1 drivers, if you stick the top or any of the IndyCar grid in an F1 car, someone like Scott Dixon, yourself, how do they fare in Formula One? Are we talking the same level with a bit of practice, getting used to the machinery? Could they compete at the front of Formula One as well as, you know, your Lewis Hamiltons and Max Verstappens?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you we're fortunate in this discussion to have some relevant and recent data points. You know, Alex Palou at COTA gets in the McLaren for FP1. He's never driven the 2022 car. It's one of the longest circuits on the calendar. That means the most number of corners and most opportunity to lose time to a teammate. And you're up against Lando Norris, who is probably talked about in the top five, definitely drivers on the grid right now. And on equal tires, not even knowing the fuel situation, kind of actually thinking Alex had a little more fuel on board based on the level of the length of run he did. I was watching this very acutely in COTA. He was 3/10 off with, I think, a little bit more fuel in the car at a track like that and his first hour in the car. That's unbelievably impressive, but it also just shows that, you know, a driver at the top of the IndyCar field, I think, can get in and compete with the best in Formula One. The IndyCar field is incredibly deep. It's incredibly competitive. You almost have to learn to race a little harder because the cars are so close. You're not just essentially racing one car. And I think, you know, Pato's done a great job. Colton, when he jumped in, you know, McLaren was incredibly impressed with what Colton did behind the wheel of one of those cars. So yeah, do I think that guys like Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton are special talents behind the wheel of a race car? Absolutely. Do I think that guys like Scott Dixon and Alex Palou in their prime are also massively talented and special talents? Yeah, I do. So I think if you really gave drivers the opportunity to do that swap over, I think you'd be really, really impressed with the results in both directions. Like, I think an F1 guy jumping into an IndyCar, you know, can be equally as impressive. I think top level drivers are top level drivers for a reason.
I couldn't have put that better myself. I totally agree with that. And the thing that, having raced in both, I think the talent at the top is the same. And actually, even in the towards the back of the grid, it's actually pretty on par. The thing which is, I have noticed having driven both, if you take a whole field, the IndyCar racing is more competitive, to the point where you might have Scott Dixon win one weekend and then he's 16th the next. With Formula One, Max Verstappen's either 1, 2 or 3, and if he's not there, he's either had a DNF because of mechanical who's been taken out. So that's the thing that I loved. And I think what the Americans found appreciate with IndyCar is it's, you wouldn't bet on it. You absolutely wouldn't bet on it because you just don't know what's going to happen because it's so tightly, you know, the field is so tight. So I completely agree with James on what he said.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a shame we haven't seen more US drivers. I know we've got Logan Sargeant now coming in, but it's a pity. I would have loved to have seen someone like Scott Dixon or yourself, James, you know, hop across to F1 just to see how you get on. Did you ever have that opportunity? Was there ever a seat that you were going for?
My European career, you know, trajectory had its fork in the road when I was 18, I guess. I had just done Formula BMW in North America, which was, you know, a former championship that I thought was a great championship. Produced the likes of Sebastian Vettel and Nico Rosberg and guys like that. And I won the Rookie of the Year, came second in the championship, my first season over here. And I was offered a paid ride over in the UK series of that championship, which was kind of the most competitive and highly touted one at the time. And that was kind of the point where I had to make that decision if I was going to try to, you know, go to Europe and pursue a career on that side or stay in North America and pursue IndyCar. You know, at that point, I was 18. I was at the most entry. I was the first level of the ladder of motorsports in North America. My parents weren't ready for me to drop out of school and move to a different continent and chase a pipe dream. And I get it. I don't disagree. I don't begrudge them that. So we kind of together made the decision to forego that, stay in North America and kind of pursue that path. And it worked out all right. So yeah. No issues there.
That's one car that I never got to drive was a Formula BMW, but I watched them a lot because they were on in the UK. They're on a thing called the Tocker package, which is the British touring car. And it was really in its prime in like 04, 05, 06. I remember Marcus Ericsson doing it. He had a silver and orange car with a Swedish sponsor, Oldsberg, or down the side of it. And it produced some great racing, great drivers, as you said. It's a shame that didn't carry on because it just made so much sense. It was, they had wings, they had a bit of downforce. They had the right sort of power to downforce levels. And it just made the racing so good that the really good guys came on and had some fantastic careers out of it. So
yeah, it was a great entry-level championship, you know, and I've not driven a modern F4 car. That kind of seems to be what the default is now out of karts, if you don't do like the Formula 1600 thing, the Formula Ford route. But yeah, it's tough to beat it, man. It was mechanically pretty simple, but it was a nice entry level into learning about car setup and learning about data, learning about downforce. But it was great. It was a great championship. I did it actually the same year that Vettel did it in Germany. And that was the first time I met him because at the end of the season, BMW Motorsports does this big party and they invite everybody that's associated with BMW. So at the time they had their F1 team, their like Andy Priya was there with the World Touring Car Program. And they invited the champion and the rookie champion of the four different Formula BMW categories around the world. So it was North America, UK, Europe, and Asia. And Vettel won the European one that year, I think. And so that was the first time I met this, you know, scruffy haired German kid. I was like, yeah, we'll see what he mounts to. I don't know. Jury's out.
Yeah, he's done all right. He's done okay.
He's worked out all right for
him. He's had a mad career when you think about it. Cause I remember when Max was racing in F1 and when we were, you know, we'd go to various places and see different things, go to the Autosport Awards, Grosvenor House in London. And you'd see Vettel there, and he is so different from the human being that he is now. Like, the growth in that man is astonishing. And back then, he was a bit of a villain. You know, when he was winning everything and he was, you know, multiple world champion, he was a bit of a villain. Now he's like completely the opposite, golden balls, you know, and has had a complete mindset change. And the things that he's doing now around, you know, some of his environmental discussions and sustainability and all these different things are quite extraordinary. An amazing bloke. One guy that we definitely want to get on the show at some point. Now, listen, we're rapidly running out of time. We've whizzed through nearly 40 minutes. So we've got a few more questions for you before we come on to our final three. Now, you are an extremely quick racing driver. Everybody knows that. But I think it's about time we embarrassed you slightly because you did take part. Well, over here, we have the show and Kelvin Fletcher, who's a racing driver over here, actually took part in it and he won it. What's it called over here, Max? Strictly Come Dancing.
Strictly Come Dancing.
Come Dancing. You have the equivalent in the States, Dancing with the Stars. You came runner up. 23rd season of the show. It's a huge show in the States. You can move. I was very impressed when I looked at your YouTube clips. What an experience.
Yeah, I mean, considering I'm a, you know, a 5'10 white guy who sits for a living, and this was my dance experience before I went on. Yeah, not bad. I think it comes down to athletes do really well on that show because we're used to pushing ourselves. We're used to repetition. We're okay with getting coaching and criticism and then applying that to whatever it is you're doing. So, I mean, I still to this day have absolutely zero dancing ability. I was just willing to work hard and fake it till I made it, so to speak.
That first live show, were you more nervous than your first race?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because you got to think about it, right? Yes, it was my first IndyCar race, but I had been racing something at some level for 15 years, whatever it was at that point. I had been dancing for like 8 days, and I was about to go live. This is not a taped show. Live to 12 million people doing something I had absolutely no business doing. So, yeah, I mean, tequila helped me get through that show. There's no doubt about it.
I think you should make James not feel so bad. Kelvin is not a race. Well, he is a racing driver now, but he was an actor.
True.
An actor naturally have a dancing ability to them. So I'm not taking away.
And a performance ability
he's a
as well.
Performer, and now he's a turned racing driver. So, yeah, I think you did remarkably well. And absolutely, I would have gone out the first week because I've got two.
No, same. I thought you did incredibly well, and you're doing yourself a disservice. You can certainly move, so well done on that. Now let's flip it on its head. What are you completely crap at? What would your family say you are totally useless at?
I thought you said we were running short on time. I have a weird passion for something that I'm absolutely terrible at, which is music. I would love to be able to play guitar or play piano or play the drums, and I cannot do any of those.
But you collect guitars. Like, you have.
I do collect them because I love them. And I used to, when I, you know, before I had a job, you know, when I was running Indy Lights and you've got a lot of free time, I would teach myself on YouTube. But I mean, by and large, I was pretty rubbish at it. And that and languages. I always, my big regrets is not learning a second language. Yes, and I just don't think I'd even have it in me if I tried now.
Okay, James, before we go on to the final few questions, what does the future hold for you? Are you focusing purely on the sort of the commentating side? Are you still attempting to obviously do the 500 or IndyCar again?
Yeah, so I mean, my driving days are not over. I still have some aspirations of doing some more sports car stuff. Like I'd love to get, you know, back in the Daytona 24. I've done that half a dozen times, whatever it is, and some of the other endurance races, because with the IndyCar schedule, it was really hard to do, you know, Petite or Sebring, things like that. So I'd love to maybe do some of the endurance races in IMSA. The you know, Le Mans, if you get some more experience doing that, Le Mans is always a bucket list thing to do. As far as IndyCar goes, the 500 is the only, you know, it's the only thing that would lure me back into an IndyCar, but it has to be the right program. You know, I had offers last year, but it wasn't worth just driving around and getting another starter ring to put on the mantle, right? It had to be a program you really think you can win with. And so if that presents itself, cool. But, you know, I understand that my race, I've got more races behind me than in front of me. And I'm so incredibly lucky that I've had this opportunity to sort of transition into the broadcast side of it. And I really genuinely enjoy it. And it's, you know, something I can hopefully do for a long time. So there's definitely, you know, a lot of focus on that side as well.
Good
and
stuff.
For the followers in the UK, what's the podcast that you do? What's it called? What does it talk about?
It's called Off Track with Hinch and Rossi, and it's myself and Alexander Rossi and our producer, whose name I forget. it's really just us, you know, shooting the breeze on our general existence as what started as, you know, two active racing drivers, now one and a half. And we cover motorsports. We cover a lot of things that aren't motorsports. It's just sort of a general talk thing. But another thing that's on my bucket list is Goodwood. So I need to lean on the record holding driver there to maybe merit me an invite at some point.
You are absolutely the right time to bring Becky over to the UK.
There
it's
you go.
A good event. So either next July for the Festival of Speed, but even better than that, next September. They do the Goodwood Revival, which Scott and Dario shared up with this year.
Jimmy was there too, right?
Yeah, Jimmy was there as well in the Mustang. He did remarkably well. I mean, I've never seen him drive so well, not in a NASCAR. Like he was in his own element, because this thing was like a 1960s or 70s Mustang, huge amounts of power. I mean, he was rapid. He was absolutely in his element there. So that was great. So yeah, I'll find you a seat over there. If you're up for it, we'll get you over. And Becky will love it for all the fashion. I mean, the Rebel Revival is just one of the greatest events that there is. It's fully British, but the racing's amazing. This year we had amazing weather, so I absolutely love to have you over for that.
Sign me up.
You've heard it here, folks. That's it. Hinchcliffe is coming to the Goodwood Revival. It's going to happen. Chilton's put his neck on the block there. You've got to make that happen now, Max. Yeah. It's now time for our final three quickfire questions, which come to us from our friends at F1 Experiences. And don't forget, people, you can get your Motormouth discount on F1Experiences.com by entering the code MMPODCAST on checkout. You get your 5% off your package. Right, I'll kick off with the first one. What's got you excited at this very moment? Could be anything.
Just in general?
In general. Racing or otherwise, whatever you want.
Oh, man.
Do you like clearing the snow? Do you like...
I do like clearing the snow, but there's not been much of that this winter. I'll tell you what I'm excited about. After 35 years of clearing the snow, I'm going to spend a good chunk of my summer or my winter, down in the Caribbean. I'm going to go do the beach thing for a month or so and see if I like that life more than the snow life in the winter.
Well, where are you going?
Bahamas.
Oh, good man. Barbados, end of January. If you fancy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. A little quick weekend trip.
Max, over to you for number two.
Oh, God. Here we go. Number two. How much of your success do you put down to luck and right place at the right time? And how much would you put down to down to hard work and grafting?
You know what? It's it'd be awesome to say, but it'd be a complete lie to say that it's 100% hard work and you know, the hustle. That is a huge, huge part of it. But especially in this sport, you know, and as a Max can attest, it is so much about timing. There are only so many seats available, you know, in any top level racing series, and being in the right cycle of driver contracts at the right time, sponsorship stuff. I mean, in a lot of ways, my timing was terrible because I started racing cars in 2004. Tobacco sponsorship ended in 2003. So if I'd been born 10, Dario always used to joke that I was born 10 years too late, because 10 years earlier, players had a huge Canadian program of young drivers. I would have been set. Wasn't to be. I lived through 08, the financial crisis, the CART IRL merger, all terrible, terrible times to be in open wheel racing in North America. But at the same time, I was in the right place at the right time when Newman Haas was looking for a rookie driver to, you know, be teammates with Oriol Servia in 2011. And had that been a year later or a year earlier, I don't know if that opportunity would have existed. So for sure, timing is a huge, huge part of it. And that's what's frustrating about this sport is your future is not all in your own control in a lot of ways, but then you have to make the best of those opportunities and you got to put yourself in a position to even be noticed for those opportunities. So that's where the hard work comes in. But yeah, it's 50-50.
Yeah. Good answer. Our final question for you before we let you get on with your day, and this can be as trivial or as deep as you want it to be. What are you scared of?
Losing. It's failure. It's probably a better way to put it. You know, as a racing driver, you're going to lose more races than you win. That's just a fact, right? So we get really good at losing. But that's what fuels you to keep going. The bigger thing for me is failure. So if you set a goal, not achieving it, right? You know you're not going to win every race. So taking that fourth when that's the best you're going to do, it's not a win, but you're not failing, right? But big mistakes that lose you opportunities to win a race or to have a good finish or anything else. I mean, it has annoyingly transferred into my post-driving life, you know, this feeling of having a goal, having something in mind, and if it doesn't pan out that way, it's just crippling, right? It's so hard to get over that. So, you know, I go into every broadcast with that same sort of mentality I did going into every race. Like, everything has to be perfect. I have to execute on XYZ, and if I don't, I'm just going to be super self-critical and, it's your biggest fear. It's your biggest fear is just is failing.
No, absolutely. I think Max could probably attest to that as well. Well, listen, James, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And Max, what a job. You're absolute natural. Look at you.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be invited back again then.
100%.
James, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic. And I've enjoyed my co-hosting with Tim.
Yeah, you smashed it, bud. Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
Thanks, boys. Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first-class hotels, travel and exclusive behind-the-scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So, to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter the code MMPODCAST, you'll get 5% off as well.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.